Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. Today, as usual, we start with the good. And Jim, it's been a rough couple of weeks for conservatives and Republicans, particularly in the presidential field, trying to find exactly the right way to approach the immigration debate that has exploded once again because Trump's had all the oxygen. And as we'll talk about later in the Three Martini Lunch, that's not the avenue we probably want to go down. And so trying to sound rational without sounding like you're a squish has been tough. But it looks like Rick Perry, among the presidential candidates, has started to find a way forward here. Tom Cotton is leading the way on this in the Senate as well. You actually reported on this yesterday afternoon on The Corner that Perry issued a statement and offered a proposal on sanctuary cities. His statement says, quote, "Today I am proposing to pull funding for the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program, or SCAP, from sanctuary cities. States with sanctuary cities will lose a proportionate amount of their SCAP funding as well. SCAP funding will also be restricted to jurisdictions that actively participate in immigration law enforcement programs. Cities and counties with sanctuary policies in place will also be prohibited from applying for federal law enforcement or Department of Homeland Security grants." So, Jim, now that we actually have some policy ideas here and a way to actually strengthen security and enforcement of existing law, hopefully we can ignore the bluster a little bit.
I was on Greta Van Susteren last night, and before I was on, Representative Duncan Hunter was on. He apparently had introduced legislation to do this like 6 years ago, introduces it every year, and it always seems to go nowhere. He felt like the Republican leadership in the House had not been nearly as supportive of this kind of legislation as he had hoped. He thinks that, you know, maybe we'll get some shift on that. There is support in the Senate, you said, from Tom Cotton, Perry touting it on the campaign trail. Well, gee, if you've announced that you're no longer cooperating with the feds on immigration law, then why should we be giving you grants for this? Why should we be helping you? You know, I kind of feel like there is a great chance for getting a significant change and applying a lot of pressure on sanctuary cities. So at the very least, they should all agree they will no longer refuse to cooperate with federal authorities when dealing with criminals with past convictions of violent crimes. Is it really that unreasonable request? That even if you feel the overall immigration policy is unjust, which I myself think is a bunch of nonsense, but fine, whatever. You're a bunch of goo-goo liberals who wants to let illegal immigrants stay in the country. At the very least, guys like this guy, Francisco Sanchez, should not have been able to stay in this country. When you openly announce we are not going to enforce the law, why would you be surprised that violent criminals would start gravitating towards those places where one group of cops has openly announced we're not going to cooperate with this other group of cops? There's momentum here. There's a need here. Republicans can get something done and actually make a fairly significant change to immigration policy.
And just to clarify, apparently we need to retract our Wednesday good martini because in the face of most Democrats sticking up for the sanctuary city policy, amazingly enough, Hillary Clinton has backpedaled after blaming San Francisco in the Kate Steinle case. Her spokeswoman saying Hillary Clinton believes that sanctuary cities can help further public safety, and she has defended those policies going back years. As she made clear, this particular individual should not have been on the streets. She believes that we need a system where people like this don't fall through the cracks, and this is why she continues to fight for comprehensive immigration reform. So that good martini's gone, but it creates a bigger chasm between our eventual nominee and Hillary on this issue, and you got to think Americans on this particular issue are definitely going to side against that policy.
This is a good I was asked last night whether it's a flip-flop and on the part of Hillary, and I said, no, it's actually a flip-flop-flip. She was fully supportive of sanctuary cities back when she was running 2007, 2008. In the CNN interview, she sounded like she was critical of it. And then obviously now, basically the subtext of that statement from her campaign is, dear pro-amnesty Latino groups, please, please don't be mad at us. We're sorry. You're speaking off the cuff. We will always do whatever you want us to do. Please don't make this an issue. Don't gravitate to Bernie Sanders. You know, let's just put this behind us. Let's move on, as they say. So that's what I strongly suspect there.
On to the bad martini now. And this probably doesn't come as a huge surprise, but it's still very bad news. This is courtesy of ABC News. The U.S. agency, burglarized by suspected Chinese hackers, has completed its long-awaited damage assessment, and more than 22 million people inside and outside government likely had their personal information stolen. That number is more than five times larger than what the Office of Personnel Management announced a month ago when first acknowledging a major breach had occurred. At the time, OPM only disclosed that the personnel records of 4.2 million current and former federal employees had been compromised. So, Jim, the problem gets worse and worse. The OPM director, Archuleta, is now being asked to resign by folks like John Boehner. They'll probably get more and more voices on this as this story continues to grow. Whether or not we change the person at the top, we've got a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, I know it'll shock you, Greg, to learn that the administration was not honest in its first assessments of the damage of this. I know it's so unlike them to trot out administration spokesman Chip Diller and tell us, remain calm, all is well. It's basically about as bad as you could possibly imagine. The FBI director said that he's pretty sure his file has been compromised as well. I think what's really fascinating, you know, Mark Warner saying that Archuleta's got to go now. What's interesting is that there's now a fairly broad bipartisan consensus. This is a colossal mismanagement. This is an inexcusable failure of just basic duties. People like me would say, look, if the government can't protect its most sensitive secrets and own data, why should they have all of our personal health records? Why should they be expanding their responsibilities and powers if they can't take care of the basics? Sadly, this is what we've kind of come to expect from this administration. One of the most baffling aspects of this, Sebelius got to hang around for a while after healthcare.gov flopped. There, you know, Obama accepted Shinseki's resignation, but after, you know, a pretty painful 2 weeks, Obama's instinct is never to say, no, it's unacceptable, you got to go. It never, you know, he's like, all right, let's move, let's do this. We've heard only almost one kind of generic statement from him on this. He doesn't seem all that bothered by this compared to, say, I don't know, the Confederate flag. President and most of his administration prefer to sweep this under the rug. And unfortunately, China getting millions and millions of records of federal employees, including sensitive information, isn't the sort of thing you can sweep under the rug.
And it's been interesting to hear a few people online, social media and so forth. And obviously, these are records of current and former personnel. But do we really need 22 million government workers?
I was Liz Mayer had a very interesting assessment on this. That maybe this may actually end up reducing the size of government because no one's going to want to work there. If all of your personnel files can be easily accessed and, you know, end up in the hands of foreign intelligence.
Amazing. All right, on to the crazy martini now. Buckle in, folks. Jim has a very interesting morning jolt today. He's gotten quite a bit of responses to his morning jolt today. And it goes into how completely intellectually inconsistent Donald Trump has been over the years. He's obviously talking very conservative now, particularly on the issue of illegal immigration. But if you go back to 2008, he calls George W. Bush the worst president ever, a catastrophe, and Obama could never be worse. You go back even further, he's a fan of government-run health care. So, Jim, this is a guy who seems more like an opportunist than a principled person who we know how he would lead if he were to somehow become president.
There are two aspects, and I'm going to really do my best to not froth the mouth into the microphone as we tape this, Greg. You know, for some reason, maybe this is my nerve is right under the skin when it comes to this topic. I know it'll shock you, Greg, that from time to time I get accused of not being a true conservative. That's spelled with like 14 U's, the same way, you know, huge, the Donald's favorite adjective uses 14 U's.
Right.
And so it'll generally be, oh, Romney was a squish. So I go through and look, Donald Trump, as recently as you know, after the 2012 election, he was saying Romney was far too harsh on immigration and that self-deportation, and it sounded as bad as it was, and he lost all the, you know, so he, you know, the guy who's running against sanctuary cities and you know, Mexico's allowing all these rapists to come up here, the guy who's now running as the toughest guy on immigration was criticizing Romney for being too tough back there. It's really hard to believe that Obamacare will not be a major issue. And this is a guy who as recently as 1999. So I'm very liberal when it comes to health care. I believe in universal health care. It's an entitlement in this country. You know, it's an entitlement in this country if we're going to have a great country. Not that Trump is very likely to get the Republican nomination, but the moment he does, all that stuff is going to come out in attack ads because he's basically – at that point, he's conceded the liberal position on health care and on the basic components of Obamacare right then and there. Criticism of Bush, there are a lot of Republicans who, you know, don't feel well, you know, more positive of Bush. Would you say Bush was maybe the worst president in the history of this country?
I don't think so.
How many Republicans are comfortable – with a nominee who would say that George W. Bush was the worst president in the history of this country, right? So incompetent, so bad, so evil. Evil? Really? I mean, I don't need this from Donald Trump. I can get this stuff from Michael Bohr. I can get this from Rosie O'Donnell, one of his best friends, you know. One of the reasons he was so angry at Bush, you know, it's like, you know, you can be enemies with people, whether it's Iran, Iraq, anyplace else, and you can still have dialogue. These people won't even talk to him. It's terrible. So one of his gripes with Bush was that he wouldn't reach out to Iran. Well, here we are, and Obama's giving away the store in his negotiations with Iran. Are you saying Trump is a liberal? Well, Trump's been a conservative for about 10 minutes now, okay? Like, I'm not saying – I'm sure he believes what he thinks right now. I think, you know, Donald Trump being a businessman first and foremost –
doesn't think terribly long or hard about these sorts of things. He says what pops into his mind. And some days his instincts are going to be liberal. Some days his instincts are going to be conservative. Now, if that's what you want, that's fine. But don't come at me and tell me that he's the conservative choice in this race. Don't come to me and tell me that he's the principled conservative in this race. And oh, by the way, I remember thinking, wait, if you can't tell me that Romney was too much of a flip-flopper, but you're really on board with this guy Trump because he's the real deal. And that's exactly what I'm getting. And probably the perfect extreme example of this. And yes, I shouldn't get too upset about one Yahoo on Twitter and what he says and all that stuff. But somebody said National Review is no longer conservative and Jim Garrity is no longer conservative. And you know why I'm not conservative, Greg? Because I pointed out the liberal things Trump has said in the past. Right? That makes me liberal. The conservative thing to do is to erase history. We are at year zero. Do not look at the past statements. And another guy who was really giving me grief, said, no, Trump is saying the right things now. Right? He's saying the right things now. Is there any lesson we thought we had learned from all of these past disappointments? Like, why are we furious at John Roberts? Because he said the right things at his confirmation hearings, and he's not voting the right way, right? George W. Bush, he sounded a small government conservative and he increased spending, right? So it's as if we just, like, somebody took a Men in Black neuralizer and flashed out all memory of everything that's happened in the past 15 years, which, by the way, like, isn't like the whole thing, conservatism, studying history, learning from history, tradition? So here is my core, the Rosetta Stone of Jim's animosity towards Donald Trump. I see conservatism as a philosophy, as a worldview. It is, that extends out into a set of policies. I don't think conservatism is an attitude. I don't think it's a style. I don't think it's an emotional state of anger. And because certain conservative people who think of themselves as conservatives are angry, they're gravitating towards Donald Trump because he seems like the angriest guy. And if that's what conservatism is going to be, at some point you reach the point where, like, okay, I'm done. I'm out of this. I'll join Charlie Cook's Conservatarian Party or something like that. You know, people I think who don't really think very much about what these political labels mean are just asserting that Trump is conservative without even looking very much at his past, what he actually stands for, or anything like that. And I'm just—it's a good thing it's Friday, Greg. How many days till I'm off on the cruise? Four more weekdays?
Okay. Another week. But first of all, fantastic research in this piece for the Jolt, going back all the way to 1999, I think it was.
No, it wasn't fantastic research, Greg. I Googled. That's all I did. This was not, hidden in the warehouse of the Ark of the Covenant. It's right out there. And nobody else is doing this because, he's really giving it to those media. He's yelling Jonah Goldberg doesn't have pants and things like that, Now, in Trump's defense, occasionally Jonah doesn't wear pants, but nonetheless.
Hopefully, like we talked about in the Good Martini, one of the reasons people are gravitating toward him on the immigration issue is because they didn't hear much in terms of concrete policy from the other candidates. We're starting to hear that now. Maybe we'll see a little bit of a shift in how voters are looking at this.
Maybe. We'll see.
Jim, on that note, take a few deep breaths, get a glass of water, and rest over the weekend. We'll have to dive back into this on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.